Ladies and gentlemen, finally, 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 WTF at TFW's prime time is back! We are here live in Washington, Oklahoma, to bring you our third WTF prime time. About episode 6 of Transformers Prime, Masters and Students. This week's episode was brought to you by the newly released in Canada and highly unhealthy for me, but I'm going to have some anyway because I'm feeling very woozy. Pepsi Throwback. So here with me today is the compunctuous man of cars, engineering, and science, the battler of the Buick, Aaron, no last name!
You can say Smith, first of all, that's okay.
Oh, okay.
Secondly, in an interesting enough twist, I am being brought to you today by Mountain Dew Throwback.
Sugar. Yeah, oh, it's Pepsi Throwback. You know what? In Canada, we never got into
stuff. In Canada, it's all made in with real sugar.
No, there's a slight difference. I realize, having tasted this Pepsi Throwback, even though we're using quote-unquote actual sugar, ours is called glucose fructose, whereas on the can of Throwback, it just says sugar. So I think that we are still stripping our sugar down a bit, but it's not corn-based like yours.
What you're getting then is, it may be something in a similar vein, because it's more refined sugar.
Yeah, but it doesn't have that weird-ass vegetable taste that I find in your guys.
They've broken the, because normally sugars are two pieces kind of chained together, and they break that so that you can get more precise control and have it be sweeter tasting with same volumes and gastronomic chemistry and all that fun stuff. Whereas with the Throwback stuff, they just go, sugar comes from sugar cane. Maybe sugar beet. We'll put it in there.
Man of science.
Yes.
I'm also having a piece of cheese. Also here to talk some prime with us is the YouTube uranium yodeler, Omegas Prime!
Oh, yes. You bet your ass I'm about this episode.
Man, don't tell me about your candy ass shirt. You know how hard it is to alliterate the letter Y?
Yes.
Holy crap. Thank goodness uranium starts with the letter Y. We're going to talk to you today about episode 6, Masters and Students. This is the first episode of Transformers Prime after the premiere break. As I understand it, going from some, there's been a lot of interviews popping up actually after the recent Toy Fair and whatnot. Although some of these were also out of Toon Zone and things like that. And, they mentioned that most CG shows will do a premiere episode, then have a break like this to make the rest of the first season. And where Prime got very ambitious was they had a premiere 5 episodes and then had a break to make the rest. So this is our first look at what Prime is a little bit more like in terms of quality as for the rest of the season, is how I'm looking at it, because this is where we're entering the phase in which they've had time to not rush to make a premiere date. And so I was very curious to check this episode out. It has a new character premiere. It has, in the opinion of some, a little bit of refinement in voice acting. I found a little bit of refinement in animation. And I'd like to chat about it. So let's do our usual approach. Let's just roundtable this and bring up discussion topics based on the episode of stuff that we might have liked. So do you guys want to start talking about the episode, or should we open up and just do a little bit of a character discussion on the new character first?
We can just talk about the new character first and let it flow from there.
Alrighty, so we were introduced to Skyquake. And the first thing I noticed about Skyquake is I really enjoyed that, since his name is Skyquake, they gave his voice this booming echo, which made me actually crack a smile and chuckle for a moment when he first started talking, which I really enjoyed. He has a big gun, and he's a large gentleman robot who turns into a jet,
and he's a Decepticon, and his eyebrows are pointy. So, Aaron, what did you think of Skyquake yourself?
He don't have no truck with Starscream. Nope. I definitely liked his intro of, you know, Starscream is trying to take credit for releasing him, and he right off the bat's like, yeah, I don't care about you.
Yeah.
Megatron's my master. And then the neat thing was right after that, Prime and Bumblebee show up, and then it seems like Skyquake kind of has like that warrior respect for Prime. You know, I was supposed to kill you last time I saw you, so, you know, let's do this dance. Starscream, shut up. So we gonna do this, Prime? So it was like a good dichotomy, maybe? Is that what you're going for?
I really liked that when Prime showed up, Skyquake actually just turned to him and went like, Prime, it's been ages, I'm supposed to kill you. But didn't, like, just run at him right away. Like, there was this little moment of like, we can talk a little bit. I mean, I'm gonna break your head open, but we can talk a little bit.
Yeah.
How about that gun?
Yes.
Yes.
Giant Gatling gun, Vulcan cannon. Daka, 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 daka.
I thought it was going to just be a huge, like, meat cleaver, that thing. Because I saw the handle on his back, and I was like, oh, he's probably got a big sword. And it's like, oh, that's not a sword.
Yeah.
That's better than a sword.
It's a chain gun. Barrels
of doom.
Yeah.
Support any Transformer that lays out that sheer number of bullets.
Yeah, I was into that quite a bit. Omegas, what about yourself? How did you take Skyquake at face value?
At face value, there is a little bit to him. Of course, being an introduction episode, even though Prime talks about burying him, so brief introduction. He almost came off like a lugnut to me, where he's okay. We have our official Megatron loyalist for this season. which was played off nicely in this one. I was not disappointed with him.
Yeah,
I definitely did like that aspect of okay, you know, we're ancient rivals. I was supposed to kill you at one time, but you know, we can shoot the breeze for a little while here.
Yeah, the whole loyalty thing. That's actually a very good comparison to Lugnut. I like that there was loyalty, but it wasn't a cartoony loyalty. It was just like this dude only knows that there is a guy who is his boss, and even though he's been locked up in a sleeper agent in a coffin for however many centuries, he wakes up and he's still like, "No, I got a boss. It's not you, little dude." And boss says, "Oh, hi, Optimus Prime. I'm supposed to kill you." the whole character thing, it laid out a little bit of the motivations of both factions, I thought, to a degree. Because the Autobots right now, as far as we know and as far as they know, they are the only Autobots right now. So I kind of appreciated that, you know, Prime took a huge step away from being movie Prime and went like, don't you think it would be better if, given that we're all so close to extinction, we try not to gruesomely murder each other? And maybe we could get along. And then, of course, Skyquake is like, no. We can probably get to that little part of the script in a bit in this episode. Just to kind of cap off Skyquake, I enjoyed that he was totally up for fighting without an alt mode, but the moment he saw the jet, he literally is like, air superiority achieved.
Yes.
And I was like, good man, because if you are an experimental military jet, that is better than being a stationary robot with a chain gun when you're fighting a pair of cars, I think. So that whole fight scene that he has with, I say quote-unquote fight scene with Bumblebee near the end, did you guys think that maybe he made a bit of a tactical error flying that low to the ground and letting a dude hop on him and then not transforming at all to get him off?
Yeah,
he wasn't quite sure about his alt mode yet. We'll put it at that. Hadn't gotten all the kinks worked out.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do any flying around before he transformed, so, you know, if he transformed now, he pretty much nosedives right into the ground.
Well, he could, you know, just transform to get Bumblebee off him and then just do it again before he hits the ground. I don't know.
Well, like, it's like, you know, like swimming. You know, you don't go swimming for a half hour after you eat. You don't, you know, do a whole lot of transformations half hour after you've woken up from a 10,000-year stasis.
Listen, man, the last time I transformed into a jet, I wasn't able to do it again, just back and forth like that. I needed to stretch in
between. Get a cramp. Yeah. Servos will bind up.
You get the rickets.
You know, this is why they only transform for like 2 minutes at a time in Beast Machines. They're brand new at it. We weren't used to it yet.
Very good point. Now, I did pop into the TFW discussion thread on this episode, and many people, and I read the final couple pages. I admit I did not read the whole thread all the way through, but I saw an overwhelming number of people more or less saying, sucks that Skyquake's dead, and I did not get that impression about him, because by the end of the episode, he's sitting there, his eyes are open until Prime walks up, then he closes them, and I was kind of like, I'm sure that, you know, that could be taken as, you know, that's him, you know, dying, but I kind of took it as, like, he's not an idiot, and he's been completely horribly mangled, and he's still thinking this is a big war, no prisoners, blah, 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 and so if the enemy walks up and he can't do anything, he's just gonna play possum. That's how I took it, but...
Yeah, I took it as biting the big one.
I just didn't see it like that, because if they were gonna do that, they wouldn't show his eyes closing with that timing.
I guess I kind of see it like that for the comic book death ability of he's dead, but leaving the write-in open.
And I mean, it's so open for, like, this is even more open than the cliff jumper thing, which you know, we've had confirmed is probably not going to be any kind of resurrection. But aside from, you know, clearly being alive until Prime walked up, possibly just closing his eyes and turning himself off. And then when Prime says we're going to bury him, and I was like, oh, okay, that might put a cap on it. Then they cut to a wide shot showing that the guy's, like, stasis chamber thing is right next to him. So I'm like, oh, they're just going to put him back in the box and then shove it back in the mountain. Yeah. I'm like, I just don't see this as a character death at all. like if Skyquake returns, I'm going to be anything but surprised. I don't know. I really didn't take it as much of a death as everyone else seemed to take it. And I don't. Maybe I'm just a bit of a strange person. I don't know.
Well, there is the limitation that this is a CGI series and models do not come cheap. You know,
totally.
So yeah, even Cliffjumper got a little bit more usage than Skyquake did so far.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would expect him to come back. You know, as Aaron said, it is a comic book death. You know, and Prime's talking, well, we're going to bury him today. It's like, he started the episode that way.
Yeah
telling.
I didn't see why so many people in the thread were kind of like, oh man, I can't believe they killed him already. And I was like, but he's so obviously not permanently dead. Like, even more than Cliffjumper. But, you know, I don't know what happens later on. Maybe he is dead. But if he is, I'd be very surprised that would be the way to off the character. With so many openings to not off the character. But I don't know. Like, did either of you guys think he was really just, like, done for? Or
I did. With the whole slow power-off thing was the rough landing. It seems like kind of a chump death, but at the same time, you know, they're saying that they're not pulling punches, that this is going to be a gritty show. That's why they started out with Cliffjumper dying, to let you know, hey, it can get serious, and it will get serious.
I just thought if it's going to be that gritty, that to me was even more evidence to me that that's not how they're going to kill him off, just because if it's going to be gritty, then I don't know.
The other thing is, I wonder how much of this is going to go back to some of the older non-CG shows, character of the week type of thing, for a little bit at least. Maybe, you know, he may not be dead, but it turns out that stasis chamber is also a CR chamber, so in 8 or 10 episodes, when it's finally time to have a you guys line up and we'll line up and shoot at each other scene, they can pad out the lineup.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really sure we haven't seen the last of him. But I mean, if this is the last we see of him, I'm not gonna be mad. I don't see it as being a probable outcome.
Right. The one thing I do like about this, the way they handled it, since we have Cliffjumper, a very well-known Transformer, killed off so fast, it does put you in that mindset of, well, maybe he really is gone. You know,
yeah, very true.
There really isn't much limit here.
Yeah, like, if they're gonna do Cliffjumper, why wouldn't they do, you know, Skyquake, of all people?
Not this half-made-up dude.
Yeah. Next thing you know, we're gonna see Skyquake's torso. Crawling around going, rah! Yeah. But I generally enjoyed Skyquake. I thought his voice was pretty well done, although I felt like there, just as a personal bit of taste, I wish his voice had had a little bit more of a creamy center to it. I don't know how to put it any better. It felt like there was a little something missing from the voice performance I would have liked, but I mean, I like the voice. I like the effects on it. I like the delivery of it. It sounds like the kind of voice where if that guy gets to come back and play Skyquake a few more times, it could really become solid. It felt like it needed another episode or two to me, but that's just, I don't know how to explain the parts of it that I felt could have been solidified a bit more.
Creamy center.
Creamy center. Someone out there knows what I'm talking about, right?
So Skyquake was missing nougat, I guess.
Yeah, it needed more caramel. Needed more,
I know what nougat is.
You know, the stuff inside Mars bars. I get Mars and Snickers mixed up all the time. Do either of you guys have any more thoughts you want to drop on Skyquake?
Not really.
What? Why did he have jet mode parts before he had a jet mode, but...
So I guess you guys don't care that he's dead.
No. The kind of attached thing that I'll use as a jumping off point for our random thoughts through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why is Fowler flying in a special top secret
jet
in a suit jacket and loose tie? He didn't even have... Did he even have on like
because a helmet? Because Fowler is the Renaissance man. He's like... I hear there's Transformer fighting going on. I don't want anyone to find out about it, and I want to make sure that I can protect myself if the worst comes to worst. I'll just jump into this highly experimental military jet, and I don't have time to put on a flight suit because that'll make everyone know what's going on. So I'll just hop in here in my suit and tie. And by the way, I'm a badass. I'm sure that he had a safety pin holding his tie down.
Okay. What about a helmet keeping his head from rattling around, or in most of those new super top secret jets, to have the heads up display on?
Well, you see, the heads-up display was displayed on the inside of the cockpit because it's so top secret. And it's so experimental, it had its own G-force compensator to prevent him from blacking out or being at risk of head injury. Not to mention that he uses secret FBI hairspray that makes his hair hard enough to be practically a helmet.
I was just curious why he just happened to be flying around that exact area even when the big military radar had just picked up the Autobots, like, 3 seconds before he got there.
I was guessing the implication was that his agency picked it up first and he was telling the local military outpost to, you know, I'm Secret Agent Fowler and you do what I tell you. Forget you said that to me.
Okay, so now you have the logic explanation. I was expecting something like, well, he was flying around that area for the last 4 weeks waiting for this to happen.
Now, Fowler was just flying around that area because he's like, I got a military experimental jet, woo! And it was just, you know, taking it for a spin. I like that he was capable in the jet. Like, when Skyquake, you know, scanned it and popped up, Fowler just went like, I don't cotton to that kind of nonsense. Just went after him. Yeah. That's what I'm kind of enjoying about Fowler, is that he seems to be, not averse to... doing the logical thing as a member of a highly top secret organization of the government, blah, 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 and like actually actively trying to take down threats himself when he has that kind of equipment at hand.
Whereas, I did like that he was less douchey in this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely seemed like it went from being kind of this antagonistic deal with the Autobots to, kind of working along with him. I mean, especially, you know, telling Bumblebee, no, jump on my jet. You know, we're running out of sky, or however he put it. Ground floor is coming up fast.
Yeah. Well, to me, that also hinted at that the fact that they probably had history before the premiere, and like that his grouchiness in the premiere was a result of the prolonged conflict that happened before the show.
Yeah.
So I like the idea that there was a little bit of that. Like when he was there with the jet taking part in the fight scene, I was kind of like, this felt like the character getting back into the old camaraderie that may have eroded away over the years before the premiere.
Yeah.
Yeah. It felt like one of the big pitfalls of a weekly cartoon series is, well, the characters all forget the lesson they learned in the last episode. Whereas Fowler, it seemed to kind of stick with him in this one that, oh, they bailed my ass out last time.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be a douchebag anymore.
He's like, I would love it too if in the next episode he shows up in, he's like, the last time was payback for you saving me in the premiere. We're square now. I'm not going to be nice to you because...
Yeah, he's actually going to say for saving me in the premiere.
Yeah, in the premiere episode on the Hub Network. Available now. At first, I was kind of like, when he showed up, I was really sure that he'd show up in a highly experimental military jet, get it scanned. Like, when he showed up, I'm like, oh, there's how Skyquake's going to get his alt mode. And then I was sure that Skyquake could get the alt mode, then shoot Fowler's jet down and render Fowler completely pointless outside of providing an alt mode. So I was kind of happy that Fowler did not get relegated to, like, Deus Ex Alt Modia.
Wow.
I just made that up.
I heard alliteration dying there.
Alliteration? Oh, man, it survives. Do you guys think that Skyquake looks like a toy candidate? I think he does.
Yeah, a lot of bulk. I mean, you know, we saw with not a lot of bulk, toys are getting made, so I see with a lot of bulk it being something easier by far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it also seems to play up to a toy since he's far brighter than most of the Decepticons we've seen so far.
Yeah, he could be the palette changer so that you don't have too many of the one color on the shelf.
Yeah. Yeah, the Decepticons are very, very much gray right now.
Yeah, and he's a different...
He's more of an autumn.
And yeah, he's a much different... Because he's got a little bit of a sort of green thing going on, but yeah. It's a very different green than Bulkhead. So, I'm sure, should Bulkhead be a Voyager and should Skyquake be a Voyager, as a hypothetical example, they could easily be one of them is like Wave 1, the next one's Wave 3. Like, they satisfy the large green robot quotient of the toy line. Let's move into some random thoughts outside of the in-depth on Mr. Skyquake. Omegas, did you have any part of the episode you'd like to bring up?
One of the points in the storyline, and Prime brought it up not once but twice, was more leaning toward the diplomacy of being the Autobot leader rather than guns ablazing, kill everything on sight.
Not being the movie Prime.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they definitely bring down the every line is the most serious line ever aspect, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I saw... One of the few tweets I read about the episode before I watched it was from GogDog, who said that I believe it was him, he said something like, Cullen has taken a whole lot of the over-Cullening kind of thing out of the voice. Like, he's toned it down. And so I made that part up. The
over-Cullification?
The over-Cullification of the Prime voice. And so I went in thinking, like, I wonder what, like, I had an idea what he meant by that. And first couple lines that Prime has with Ratchet, I was like, that's so true. He's stopped doing narration for the voice, and he's doing a character for the voice.
Yeah, there's one line in there that just amazed me, and I almost expected to hear, you know, would it not help to help these kids with their schoolwork? It's just like the overemphasis on the most subtle line possible.
Yeah. I also this sidetracks a little bit, but it's related to the Prime voice thing. I also really enjoyed in that opening scene in the animation. If you watch, I believe it's Prime's eyes kind of flit left and right down just a little bit while he's talking. And it was this little touch of the animation that that really stuck to me for some reason. Like this little moment of him kind of like glancing down to the right, back down to the right again, then back up and turning around. And I was like, that little kind of, you could see the mental pause as he's thinking of something. And something about that really stuck with me pretty well. It's like that's when you have Transformers where you have mechanisms in their eyes so that they have irises and pupils, that is why you would do it, so they can have those, you know, characterful glancing around things. Whereas I find often in the live action movies, they don't utilize that effect quite enough, given that they in those movies also have so much griblies or whatever you want to call them inside their optics. They're
griblies.
They call them griebles or something. Like, I don't know. It's some
fan. You are full of words today.
That's someone else's.
Giebel?
I think it's griebles or something.
I've heard that term before for just. I think that's actually like a model, like a computer modeling term for like this is extra junk that's superfluous, but
I really hate the word. I think it sounds stupid, but I don't know of another term for that stuff yet. Listeners, let's come up with a new term. Let's replace Greebles or whatever it is. Greebles sounds like a country in Lord of the Rings.
A Greeble or Nerney is a small piece of detailing added to break up the surface of an object to add visual interest to a surface or object, particularly in movie special
Nerney?
Effects.
A Nerney?
Nerney.
Are you seriously telling me it's an...
N-U-R-N-I-E. Greeble sounds better.
Greeble.
Greeble does sound better, but that's in no way a compliment to Greeble. Nerney?
Yeah. Nerney.
Greebles are commonly found on models or drawings of fictional spacecraft in science fiction.
I mean, I'm not trying to knock people who use the word, absolutely not, because there is no other terminology for this stuff that I'm aware of, but I think here in 2011 we could perhaps upgrade the term somewhat to not sound so much like a small fuzzy creature.
I would be careful though, the etymology here is saying that it comes potentially from the guys that started doing special effects for Star Wars and founders of ILM, and we're treading on George Lucas territory, so...
Well, you know, George Lucas
He has the money to have you killed.
He reinvents things all the time. Why don't we reinvent the Greeble?
I say we just make... Like, the Greeble sounds like a distant relative of the Fraggle, and let's just name it that.
Yeah, a fuzzy Muppet. That doesn't make me think technology. It makes me think soft, scoogey thing that sings. I don't know. Omegas, we have strayed far from your point about the diplomacy thing, but I agree with you about the diplomacy being a pertinent thing to bring up about the episode.
Yeah, because you think of the Autobots, it's supposed to, they're supposed to be the peaceful class. They're not supposed to be the ones blasting faces off and...
Yeah,
hunting down scared hidden Decepticons,
cutting them in half, and then saying, gloating over their desiccated, bisected corpse and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I thought they had a little bit of it with his lamenting over how Megatron, air quotes, died.
That was hinted at in one of the interviews as well. That Optimus Prime apparently thinks there is still good in Megatron somewhere, or something like that, or that there's still something worth defending in Megatron, which relates to their unspoken backstory that we have yet to see. The whole conversation that he had with Starscream and Skyquake, there was an excellent theory, I think it was posted in the TFW thread, and I really liked it, which was that what if Skyquake wasn't there and Starscream said, I'll agree to it if you bow to me and call me your lord and master? Like, do you think that Prime would be so desperate at this point to end the war that he'd be up for, like, if that's what it takes to have us stop killing each other, we'll all call you the king?
And then I don't think he'd do it.
I don't know, because this Starscream hasn't proven to be, like, he hasn't proven to be quite as maniacally destructive as Megatron in Prime. And someone made a good point that, like, there's, what if Starscream presented that case in a certain way? Like servitude over genocide.
It's still submitting to subjugation, though, which is not the Autobots' goal. They're trying to prevent that, I believe.
Yeah, even though this Prime... is military leader, I definitely see him being the ultimately we want democracy or whatever, something close to that.
What I'm thinking is like enter into this hierarchical servitude and then from within that work out the democracy. Like, I don't know, I just see that given the dwindling numbers of their species in this series and this Prime's stated intent that he doesn't really want to see anyone else get killed at this point. It just seemed like it would have been a possibility that, like, maybe he'd be like, we can try to take him out from the inside, but if this will staunch the outright combat and slaughter that's going on, I don't know. It just seemed like a possibility to me. But then someone's like, "Nah, Prime's a badass. He wouldn't take that movie. He cut his face off, wear it on his crotch. I don't know." Any other thoughts on the diplomacy stuff?
I think that pretty much does it with the face crotching.
Yeah.
That's a great way to cap off any discussion topic. Face crotches. Aaron, have you got a part of the episode you'd like to discuss?
A little bit of jump around back and forth, but love Ooh. Ratchet more and more.
Oh, man. He got to be so Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah. It was, you know, it was what was my first little text here? Proper Autobots help humans, you know, kind of the silly human insert thing that also included about the best line of the show was, "You're human, Jack. Can you build me a small intestine?"
I really like that. That was a great way to kind of communicate. Like, I think a lot of people, like, one of the weirdest fictional roadblocks to get over with something like Transformers is, like, what is a Transformers character's mindset about the way that their physicality works?
Right.
And that was a great line. Yeah. Like, you're a motorcycle. Can't you build a motorcycle? And it's like, well, you're right. A human. Can't you put together a human? It's like, oh.
But the way that he just goes all mad scientist over these pretty stock, except for maybe Jack, you know, Jack was rebuilding a motorcycle as part of his science fair thing, but the planet mobile thing, and then the standard volcano.
Old standbys.
Yeah, that then turns into some sort of energy beam cannon that blows a hole through the school, and some sort of, she ended up with, what was it, Cybertron and its two moons.
Yeah. And it's incredibly heavy.
And then Jack ends up with some weird jumping.
I don't even know what that was.
Bit thing. But, you know, and for the hidden moral story of do your own dang homework. Don't let other people do it because it'll mess up even if you think it's cool.
Yeah, like there are way more ham-fisted and kind of like, oh, bulkhead kind of ways to do that story. And I like that they Jeffrey Combs it up with Ratchet just going all like, basically going like, I want to hear the adulation of my work through your science fair project. And then
had you done this on Cybertron, you would have been given awards.
Yeah, I love when they come back and he's all like, how do they like my work? It's like
my our work.
Well, I like how shameless he is about it. He's just like that line when Bulkhead and RC are like, we're going to go help out the other two with their things. He's like, you don't want my help.
Yeah.
Don't you want it to be right?
This isn't feasible.
God. How did Raph not get an A on his?
If he was supposed to be rebuilding a motorcycle.
Not Raph.
Raph.
Because, okay, a 12-year-old just built a photonic energy projection weapon.
Yeah, but it's not a volcano.
Yes.
Yeah, but you have to realize there's a rubric there.
Okay,
did you have red or orange colored foam coming out of it? No. That's 10 points.
But it killed Miss Crabtree on the second floor.
Look.
Was it made out of paper mache? No, that's 20 points.
Aaron, you know someone in the teaching field, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so would that have flown to go outside of spec and make a photonic laser blaster out of metal in the shape of a volcano?
If their stated goal was to make a photonic laser blaster, then they'd be cool. If they were supposed to be making the standard paper mache baking soda and vinegar volcano with food coloring, probably not. You might get a special mention and bill for the roof and floor and roof and floor and roof and floor, but
what we need is a follow-up comic book to shed some light on the backstory of that science project assignment.
Yes, was that just general science project? Did he have a stated, you know, the whole scientific method of hypothesis and research and all that fun stuff?
Mm-hmm. Also, Jeffrey Combs is awesome.
Yeah. Let's weld this some bitch together.
Yeah, the characters, there were moments there where I was just like, anyone who's watching this who hasn't seen any Reanimator movies at this point needs to go see the Reanimator trilogy. It's well worth your time. I don't care if you're underage. When I was underage, it was cool to camp out in your parents' backyard, sneak a bunch of booze into the tent, and watch Reanimator on Canada Day evening. When I was 16, that's what we did. And at this point, I get emails from hundreds of angry parents going, why are you promoting underage drinking on your Transformers broadcast? Blah, blah, blah. Someone, I saw another thread. This is a little bit of a side tangent. I saw another thread, actually, of someone saying that we haven't seen Ratchet transform yet. And I thought we did in the first episode.
Yeah, I think we did in the first episode.
Yeah. That's pretty sure. Now that we were thinking about Ratchet.
I can't remember.
I'm really sure he transformed, but... Anyway, I want to talk about Soundwave, because I love Soundwave. And anyone who was on Twitter this morning, the morning of February the 15th, saw me do my one tweet about Transformers Prime, which was that Soundwave is so gloriously creepy. And this is compounded by the recent Toon Zone interview, I believe it was the Toon Zone interview, where it was stated that it's not that Soundwave cannot talk, it's that he chooses not to talk.
Dun, dun, dun.
And so when he's chilling out there, like, I rewatched that scene specifically before we recorded this podcast. I rewatched it in particular, just to have it fresh in my mind. The scene where Starscream's like, why did you stop recording? You know, we can't go find them. And then Soundwave just starts playing the beacon at him.
Yeah.
And he's like, there's something in space. He's like, that can't be, it's Megatron. He's like, that's impossible. And I also love that whole scene was animated, but all you saw was Starscream's reflection in Soundwave's face. So it's like Soundwave makes sure his face is this perfect polish so that when you're talking to him, you see yourself talking to yourself. It's like,
you know how silly you look right now? Here's how silly you look.
It's so like he doesn't let you, I don't know, this might not be the intent, but I took it kind of like, you know, When you're trying to make up things and lie to Soundwave, you have to look at yourself doing it, and it makes it harder. And so I also like that when Starscream's like, delete that from the record, Soundwave just waited a beat and then played the ping again.
Yeah.
Like, that's his way of saying, no, you're going to go get Megatron. and then that wonderful thing the Soundwave does, Starscream takes off, he watches him go. Also, when Starscream said he'll go to get Megatron, someone brought this up in the thread. Soundwave does this awesome, just little tiny head nod where he dips his head down a little bit, kind of like, oh, really? And then, you know, repeating Starscream's line with the Soundwave vocoder over it and sending his little chest drone after him. I just like, I love this Soundwave so much. Of all the Prime toy reveals, I was sad that Soundwave was not among them because, like, the one Prime toy, if I had to drop, like, if someone's like, I will sell you a Prime toy right now for, you know, double price if you want it right now, I'd be like, Soundwave! And then the toy will turn out to suck and I'll be like, I'm stupid. But man, Soundwave, I really, every time he shows up in an episode, in the premiere, now in this one, every time I see Soundwave, I get excited just to see what he'll do. Because he only ever has one or two moments, like maybe 30 seconds total out of the 20-some minutes of the episode. But they are always my favorite 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's like always Soundwave moments.
Yeah, and they all build because, I don't know, it's like we said before when I was talking to Gog in a previous Prime Time. It's like, I really hope that if Soundwave ever speaks, they damn well make something of it.
Yeah.
Like, make that a season finale moment. Make that a series finale moment. Soundwave saying a line. Make that.
And all he says is, sup.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, like, as this is a total hypothesis, but let's say that, for instance, one season ends with Starscream and Megatron, you know, all totally beaten and crippled, they've lost everything, and then, like, they're like, what are we gonna do next? And then Soundwave just goes, like, Soundwave superior, you two inferior, I'm in charge, something, something. Just be like, oh, man.
No, it'd be, like, two words, you know, it's my turn. Just, like, really short and sweet.
Or, like, yeah, and then, like, I don't know, having a face, some kind of just creepy-ass digital face pop up on that faceplate for just a second when he actually speaks. I don't know. There's so many places to take this Soundwave. He's easily my favorite character on the show right now, just for the potentials.
And I do like the way that Starscream would completely flip-flop personality. He would go from the backstabber to the suck-up whenever Soundwave was around.
Yeah, like, I like,
you know,
that
because he knows that Soundwave is recording everything and building up whatever. So I wonder if Soundwave is kind of more of a power behind the throne type of deal than what we know of, because, hey, he's got all of this tape of everybody doing everything, and oh yeah, remember that time you did this? Click.
Well, and click. What I
Why
really
don't
like
you go get Megatron?
Starscream starts doing the whole like I'm Lord Starscream, I'm in charge now thing, but even when he was the second in command, he clearly outranks Soundwave. In the way that Starscream is presented as a character. I love that Soundwave is just like, nobody ever argues with Soundwave at length, because they're like somewhere between knowing that he's recording everything, or maybe just the fact that he's so damn creepy.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't want to have a prolonged conversation with him. Or like, there are even parts where, there's a part in this episode where Starscream was having a conversation with Soundwave, and Soundwave was never saying anything. It's just like, everything that Soundwave says is implied.
Right.
But very clearly implied. I am a huge fan of this. This has actually become my favorite version of Soundwave to date. No knocks against previous ones, but this is the most engaging Soundwave personally that I've seen ever.
You're gonna get Bieber level like death threats for that.
That bring it, man. I liked animated Soundwave, like G1 Soundwave. I actually dug Galaxy Force and Cybertron Soundwave to a degree.
Get out.
A very small degree, but to a small degree. The Cybertron version, only because when I finally listened to a clip of him from that dub, because I never watched Cybertron, I liked that he had the actual Soundwave voice underneath a normal voice, so it sounded like the normal voice was just this facade that he put together to try to be more approachable. I don't know. But this Prime version of Soundwave has utterly won me over, and I you know, Soundwave's a jet, too bad, because it's the best Soundwave. So now the best Soundwave's a jet. I said it. Either of you guys have nearly the level of fealty I have sworn to this Soundwave, or
not quite that far. I just, you know, that was the point, the Soundwave character point I kind of had down, is the fact that Starscream isn't good on camera, you know, because the same thing from before, and that Soundwave's finally really starting to show character of, the, you know, the whole thing that you said of, Megatron couldn't be alive, beep, really? You know, that the implied conversation that was going on there.
Yeah, and the way he leers.
That's just good writing and good CG. To be able to just have just that little bit of nod forward. It's not just standing there stock still or generic motion. It's that kind of lean in. I, you know, in a person would be the lean in eyebrow up like, mm-hmm.
And for Soundwave, it works even better because he has no face.
Exactly.
It's not even that he has a visor and a faceplate. It's that he has no face. Like that is how you, oh man, like that's an aesthetic that I don't see enough, is like the inherent creep factor of a guy with no face. I don't know. I think we can move past Soundwave now. I'm just gonna keep gushing.
You don't want to, but we do.
I know. It's just that whole bit when I didn't notice it till I rewatched the scene when Starscream is reflected in his face the entire time. I was like, that's such an awesome touch. Let's bring up another thing. Omegas.
There's part of me that, speaking of how much Starscream liked to essentially talk to himself this whole episode,
kind of loudly.
I really like there's a lot of sinister tones to his performance in this episode, but at the same time he all his dialogue is very campy in a way. You know, to the point where I kind of have to love it, where he almost got a little General Zod for me when he kept talking about people bowing to him. So that, you know, to the point where Skyquake's just slapping him aside for saying it too much.
Oh, I love that when he tells Prime to bow to him, and Skyquake's like, again? Punches him across the canyon. That was good. Just like he's like the sheer impertinence of this scrawny little thing.
But that is great of Starscream. He's got this duality to the character where he's very sinister. He's very much the schemer that we know Starscream as, but he is such a coward underlying all of that.
Yeah.
He slinks down the second anyone raises a fist.
And I really like that. I mean, it didn't quite maintain what I saw in the pilot five episodes, but I like that there was still this kind of sense that he's not so much. He's there. He has an ego. He's there for his glory, but he's also kind of got still the desire to maintain the Decepticon cause as well, if not just so that he won't be stuck on his own being the king of absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it seems like maybe some of the G1-y bits of Starscream to pick that kind of fight turned up and a little bit kind of decampified.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's the schemer backstabber, but he's also the suck up when in front of everybody else without maybe some of the incompetence.
Yeah, he doesn't.
That
he
came
doesn't
along with G1 because you had to get back to where it was at the beginning of the episode mostly, you know, to have him do whatever, you know, Megatron stumbles on something in the base. Ha I am now leader. Oh, no,
yeah,
I'm not.
He doesn't blatantly do it in front of everybody to the point where you kind of go, like, why is he still alive if he's...
Yeah.
And that's why I like the implication. Well, this is later on in probably our discussion, but I like the implication that, like, this could all come back to bite him in the metal arse, if you will, because Megatron did open his eyes for a couple moments there.
Yeah.
Starscream found him, and I was like, ooh, I wonder if Megatron remembers all that.
I do like that this Starscream is incredibly sinister when things are going his way.
Mm-hmm.
He himself does come off as a very wicked character, but he always has this... He's a lot smarter than the original G1 Starscream in that when things stop going his way, he's smart enough to work around it and kind of have a fallback point at all times.
Yeah, you don't feel kind of like you kind of buy that he's able to get away with what he's doing to a degree.
Right. Yeah, it's not you're not asking yourself, you know, like with G1 Megatron in any incarnation, you just wonder, okay, why hasn't he shot Starscream through the face years ago?
Yeah.
Obviously, this would have helped him considerably.
In the long run.
This time you kind of see it because he does worm his way past those kinds of stops all the time.
I really enjoyed his performance in this. I mean, the voicing on him, like I said before, I love that kind of croak on his vowels. Like that kind of rippling croak effect on his vowels, mm-hmm. which is probably just the voice acting. But I really that. Like it's probably a hard thing to maintain, so I really enjoy that part of it. And the way the episode opened with him just going, like, you know, put me on all the monitors so I can deliver a speech to the troops.
Oh, I love that.
And the troops, there's maybe like 15 of them. But and most of them seem to be in the same room as he is. But he's still like, I gotta do a speech.
And completely could care less about what's going on. Like,
yeah, most of them are just like,
yeah.
And I like the one who even pipes up, like, because I was like, okay, this is proof the Erraticons are not entirely drones.
Yeah. Like, oh, I don't think they're drones at all. I just think
it's
guys that haven't earned a name or something yet.
It almost reminds me of like if you ever saw Despicable Me, the Minions, like mass produced but very individual.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we all look the same, we're all the same, but, okay, this is Steve, and this is Bob, and he's a filing clerk, and, you know.
Yeah, I was so happy when one of the Erraticons started to speak, because I was like, this also adds to me so many more stakes on what we just saw in the premiere, where they were getting pretty viciously massacred.
Just smoked.
Yeah, because I was like, that adds to the, like, that gets away from the what drones usually bring to a cartoon, which is... You now have a thing you can guiltlessly slaughter for the sake of some cool action scenes.
Yeah.
It's like, that was Decepticon Bob. Got his guts pulled out by Bulkhead.
There's a new spot in accounting!
Yeah. So, that speech. That Starscream, again, another character who I'm interested to continue seeing, who I'm not done with, I'm not tired of, I'm actively enjoying. Aaron! What's another part you'd like to bring up of the episode?
Oh, more Bumblebee and thinking with your route at it that he's actually just completely crazy. I don't know how many times it was like Bumblebee would sit there and bleep, bloop, 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 blop, blop, bleep, bleep, bleep. Oh, uh-huh, yeah, oh. It was like, he could totally just be saying, look, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to rip your guts out. I'm going to tie him around. I'm going to make a bow. And then we're going to take that bow and we're going to put it on the front door. You see? Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that does make sense. And then, no. Hold on. Hold on. Here's the good part. Because then I'm going to take your feet and I'm going to hang them from the bottom of the bow. That would look like you walking in line. And just so much range there for Bumblebee to be absolutely crazy. And I know it's not what they're going for. They're going for the Minicom thing, but still, it's like...
He got a little manic when he was on top of Skyquake and was pulling his guts out with his bare hands.
Yes.
I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, you know what he's really saying?
I'm going to eat these later.
God, I would so do this to that kid if he were here right now.
Yeah.
That reminds me also another thing from that Toon Zone interview, or I mixed the Toon Zone interview up with the stuff from Toyfer, but from all those interview moments was someone mentioned the Bumblebee beep voice, and they mentioned that perhaps off screen he himself is trying to figure out a way to cure it. So apparently they'd like to, it sounds like they would like to actually go places with it as a character tool. Where the movie was unable to.
It'll be neat to see the real story behind, you know, the true Hollywood story of how that happened. You know, I think that could make for a good flashback episode or two. But
even three? No.
Maybe. If you had other characters' backstories in there, too, that would work.
Yeah. No, it's the Bumblebee trilogy.
The Bumblebee trilogy, is that what it's going to be?
The Bumblefather. Yeah, I actually found myself, because Bumblebee and Prime from the premiere were two of my least favorite characters in the show. And I don't mean like least favorite because I like them, but I like everyone else more. But if you heard our Primetime podcast, they were two characters I was kind of actively criticizing in many ways. And having them be the focus of this episode made me a little bit like when Ratchet said, I'll stay behind, and Prime's like, all right, Bumblebee, you come with me. I was like, no, don't bring him. Because I was like, it's going to be Prime and Bumblebee. It's just going to be you two guys who I don't care about that much. And both of them, I thought, did a pretty good job this episode in making up for the weaknesses I found in the opening five-parter. Prime's performance, Cullen's performance as Prime, was a lot less like a movie narrator. And Bumblebee actually accomplished some stuff, and I was able to see more of what Bumblebee is in the show, rather than just an iconic robot to have to make sure people come and watch, you know, the new Transformers stuff. Like, I could see, they say he's the youngest one, he's a scout, and he's impetuous, and he's the dude who jumps on top of moving jet planes and stuff. I was like, alright, I can see where this is coming from now. I'm getting a better feel on the character as best I can on a guy who beeps all the time. So I ended up being pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed the episode, given that it featured my two least favorite Autobots on the cast, and they've both improved their standings with me through this episode and how they were delivered.
Yeah, on Prime is really mostly how Cullen was being presented at the time. It's very much in the voice acting that, well, you know, this Prime, it doesn't feel like... You know, it feels like the Prime I've been watching in the Bay movies. You know, it doesn't feel like his own entity yet. You know, especially with the diplomacy that he was speaking in this episode, and you know, being a little bit more understanding with the humans in this one, he definitely came off as a much more real character.
He felt like an aged version of the G1 Prime to me, which I think is what they've always tried to go for with modern Cullen performances. And this one felt like the 80s Prime, you know, much older and much wiser and having seen many more horrible things.
Yeah.
So I was far more enjoying that performance than before.
Yeah, it seems like movie one Prime taken a different way than movie two sent him to. The optimistic.
Movie two sent him to depravity.
Yeah, the optimistic lets everybody... You know, work well together and protect these humans and be buddy-buddy with them. Not movie two, I'm going to F you up. You're going to get effed up twice. Give me your face.
I'm going to cut your skin off, feed it to you, and then just eat you anyway. Still waiting for Prime to eat somebody.
I don't
want to
know what's going through your head.
I'm waiting movie three. Prime is just going to eat somebody. You're gonna be like, oh, give me hi, your how body. You doing? Oh, rah, rah. Huge grinders in his throat, just like.
that's what he's got the faceplate for. It's just to cover up the oil in case someone comes in on him.
Yeah. What?
I'm doing some tactical work, Bumblebee. Go and get me some fresh meat. I forgot where we were now. Aaron, did you just bring something up?
Yeah, the Bumblebee bleep bloop.
I like how Bumblebee got us onto Cannibal Prime.
Yeah.
That was pretty fabulous.
I don't know. About the only thing, two other things I have left on my list is the CGI.
I was going to bring that up next myself anyway, so let's just run with
really
it.
Really good. The hand-to-hand combat felt like it was real contact. They didn't do the, you know, kind of bad movie stunt of about ready to hit, pull camera away for dramatic flying action. It felt good, and then I didn't realize until the third time I watched it, just before we sat down to record here, that I think a good portion of that also was just good, like Foley and sound effects.
Oh,
to
Foley
go
was
along
awesome
with it, you know,
episode.
Because there's a difference between like metal hitting metal, pong, and then there's, you know, metal hitting something hard within that little bit of grind that you know has got to be happening when there's that much force going on.
Yeah, there was a lot of good crunk,
you know,
to the noise in this one. I know the crunk is in Urban Dictionary, but shut up.
I think if you took some of that, shall we call it crunk, yes, out, and you just made it generic, okay, you know, you've got your fully mixed computer digital file, and you go, okay, metal hitting metal number 6, then followed by metal hitting metal number 3,
like you said, like
with a solid 8 thunk behind it, you know, and then it's just like ping, pong, pong, but
yeah,
when
like,
you have...
like you said, if it was just like, pang, like when he hits him in the face, it would have been like, alright, whatever, but it was like, there was scraping, there was, I mean, how do people spell crunk? Let's just spell it differently. Let's use more K's.
I think we'll C-R-U-N-K is the Urban Dictionary.
All right, we're talking about K R U N K. K R U N C K.
Crunk. It's derived from an old sound effect from the 60s Batman, I believe.
Yes.
K R U N C K does not, you know, it kind of shows up in a really bad Urban Dictionary, but we've got space there on K R U N C K.
We're taking it back.
Okay.
This is crunk now for the year 2011. This is crunk. The Foley work was great, but the CGI, I really wanted to bring up, not so much actually the action. I actually thought if there is a weakness still remaining in the CGI, it's that sometimes the gesticulations of characters get a little bit overly wild, you know, like milking the invisible cow, as they call it, where you're reaching out and clenching your fist and pulling it down constantly. There's a little bit of wild gesticulation, but the parts I enjoyed actually were there were a lot of subtleties to the animation.
Yeah.
Sound waves, little head movements, everyone's little head movements, Prime's eyes flitting down into the right a little bit here and there. Little twitches in the face, like these tiny little motions. Even Fowler had one where he kind of shook his head a bit while he was saying something. Little motions that in most heavily keyframed CG shows would often get passed over. In Prime, they are capturing so many just tiny, like for me in CG, the far more important thing are the subtle motions, because that's how you make it not look like a piece of computer graphics, and you make it look like a computer generated life form.
That's when you work around the uncanny valley a bit.
Yeah, like when someone says something and they glance down a little bit, they glance a little bit over to the side of the ground, and they look back up, and then they kind of like half turn their head, then turn around. Like little things like that add so much life to the characters as compared to like, and I hate to say it negatively because I kind of enjoyed the show, but in Galaxy Force, where someone would just kind of like keyframe, turn all the way around. Yeah. And then, like, keyframe, look right, like literally go from, like, in 12 frames, he must go from standing to leaning forward, like,
yeah.
It's like,
it makes me wonder if they do mocap, if they do motion capture for some of the little movements.
I'm curious about that, because I wouldn't be surprised if...
Even if it's just broad, we just keep going, I'll just keep talking past you.
Bah, bah, bah,
even
bah, bah,
if it's just the broad, you know, okay, you know, we have 18 different cycles of somebody walking and doing some poses so that they have more than just go here to their computer, animate, go!
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there was mocap involved, but I would be equally unsurprised if this was just the quality of the animators working on the project, because I'll always kind of, like, this is totally a different basket of eggs. But to cite Pixar, as far as I understand, a lot of Pixar's animators are trained 2D animators who were then taught to use the 3D software. And that is a league of difference in how well you can animate in CG. And I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of these subtleties are just people who are well-trained animators applying that to their craft. Because especially like with motion capture, I think that one of the things motion capture can easily lose are the subtleties. So I would hesitate to think that motion capture might be the responsible for some of the things I'm really enjoying. But for stuff like the action scenes or for walk cycles and whatnot, I can see if that was something that was practical for them to do. That being the case, that's probably something worth. If it hasn't been asked in an interview, that would be a totally viable BotCon question if those guys have a panel at BotCon.
Yeah, that would be awesome if they did.
I would love to ask him some things about that, because the animation in the show, like I, you know, weekly CG is easily one of it's one of the easiest things to get very trepidatious about and to have a lot of hesitance in wanting to watch, because you know, weekly any animation can suffer, and when CG suffers, somehow CG that suffers really suffers more than hand drawn that suffers.
Well, I think if I'm talking video games to somebody, I equate it to like, okay, two-dimensional art doesn't get old. It doesn't age nearly as much. You know, the Mona Lisa, old, still looks great. If I put in Final Fantasy VI, it still looks really nice for a 2D because it's two-dimensional.
Right.
If I put in Final Fantasy VII, not so much.
Yeah.
The second you add technology to it, it dates very fast.
And if something's poorly animated, if it's hand-drawn and it's poorly animated, sometimes you still get that thing where it's like, there might still be frames or there might be, you know, panning shots that still look okay. If CG gets a rush job done, usually I find it suffers overall way more than rushed 2D.
You can't smooth those corners nearly as well.
Yeah, you can't BS stuff by just drawing things small or things like that. So CG has a lot more, I find, has a lot more risks added to it in a weekly form. And so seeing that, you know, now that we're entering Prime's weekly episodes, this was a very strong start CG-wise, and I was really happy about that. I remember when we saw the premieres, I was saying sometimes the mouth movements felt a little bit strange and unnatural to me, and they even felt a little bit improved in this episode. I didn't feel like there was a disconnect between what was being said and what the faces were doing as much. So everything just feels a lot more solid on the animation end, and I'm really happy about that, because it makes it a lot easier to pump the show up, because if someone's going to come into the show with a lot of, you know, cynicism and negativity up front, and it's a CG show, it can be very hard to convince someone that it's worth checking out. Aaron just copy-pasted something.
That's a chunk of text from the front page.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Okay, let me quote... The strong performance of the eagerly awaited CGI animated series from Hasbro Studios, which included the unveiling of the newest character, Sky Quake, was the best ever series premiere for the Hub among households with a capital H. The episode was also generated massive time period increases versus prior 4-week averages across virtually all of the network's key target demographics, including kids 12 to 11, 1,350%.
Yeah, the walk-in goes away real quick. Keep reading those numbers.
Kids 6 to 11 plus 1,250%. Adults 18 to 49 plus 2,700%. Women 18 to 49 plus 4,000%. Persons 2 plus 16-18%. And households plus 13-33%. Also, men 18 to 49 increased by 2,050%. Those are a lot of four-digit percentile increases.
Yes.
Wow.
Which likely means that time spot the 4 weeks before wasn't filled with anything with any sort of strength there. But if you're talking about powerful things, they're also talking about lead-in, lead-outs, which that's the show before and after, being increased by 51 to 110% approximately. So it's helping tag people in and keep them in.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually, this is pretty good news, because also, if Prime is causing these kind of ratings increases, these kind of, this was the best ever premiere for this network among households kind of news story, that does bode well for the brand on the whole as well. So that's good. That's very good to hear. Hopefully Prime can maintain that steam because, you know, we are going to be losing the live action movies soon, which means potentially losing a lot of that cash that was coming in to fund a lot of the other cool things Transformers was doing. So if the TV show can maintain that heat for a little while, that's very, what's the word I'm looking for? Very promising.
Yeah. Well, that'll help guarantee numbers when Hasbro can come back around and say, hey, you know, the show's doing these awesome numbers week to week. Maybe it's worth keeping money in here, even if it's not a direct multi-million dollar draw.
Well, also, they've confirmed they're now already working on season two, and they said that they've written the show to be 3+ seasons. This bodes well that the show will hopefully not get its intended opening story arc canned before it can complete.
Yeah. They did say something that having their own network does free them up considerably from the usual stresses of maintaining viewership and sponsorships, mm-hmm. that they have a lot more room to play around with and a lot more security as far as keeping up a television production.
Yeah. And I mean there is an easy negative side of this to bring up, which is that these are all in the context of the hub's usual viewership, but does the hub have a healthy viewership as a network? Which I don't actually know.
That's the rough thing
because it's a premium channel. I had to go up a cable package step in order to get the hub.
So I mean, this huge increase in viewership is a great thing, but is it a huge increase in the bigger picture, or is it just a huge increase in the hub as a new network getting this much viewership? Yeah. That's the question I think that's left to be asked. Not to shoot the good news in the foot or anything, but just throwing out the other side here. Before anyone goes like, you bunch of sheep! Which, by the way, I should clarify, even though this isn't in a weekly episode, I don't think we've ever really gotten the comment that you guys are a bunch of sheep, but I still get amused by the notion, so I keep bringing it up. I'm sorry. Sorry, everybody. I'm a horrible person. Omegas, do you have something you'd like to bring up?
Let's see. There's not a whole lot left on my list. Talked about Balor. Talked about Starscream's dialogue, which he tried to declare himself the Emperor of Destruction.
That made me squee a little bit, like a manly squee. But I was like, somebody did their research.
Yeah.
I think when everyone first got the internet and Transformer fans first got to see all this info on Japanese Transformers, and the first time they saw Emperor of Destruction was every Megatron ever, there was that exact same reaction the Radicons had of,
Yeah. Well, that's why I really liked that it was an homage. Like omelet. There was almost an homage. There's an homage going on there. Yet the Eradicons also reacted very much in kind, as you said. You know, like, what if someone today walked up and said, I'm the Emperor of Destruction? You'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
That's a cool name, I guess. Except for how it's dumb, but...
See, aside from that, the only other thing left on my list was during the fight scene I was really impressed with. If only because there's actually a lot more play with the vehicle modes during the battle.
They transformed while they were fighting. It made me so happy.
Yeah. Like, one of my biggest concerns, especially when we're in the trilogy era, was, okay, vehicle modes were relegated to getting character from point A to point B and would never, ever be seen when a gun was drawn.
Well that was one thing. They also functioned to insert lengthy stock motion sequences of cool can animation of them transforming in the Unicron trilogy, if that's what you mean. So they'd use them to get from point A to point B, then they'd go like, push the button. It's like, all right, push the button. Transform! And like, dun, 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 like stuff moving everywhere. Lots of close-ups.
Yeah, 40-second transformation. Why isn't someone shooting him by now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I want to go back and give Cybertron a chance. When I heard that, and when I saw a clip, I watched one episode of it on YTV where they would just start talking during those lengthy sequences, and I was like,
"Oh my god!"
I love the idea that they're just starting to trash talk each other while they're transforming. They're like, "I'm here to stop you," like as he's clunk clunk. I'm gonna stop your ambitions, man. Clunk clunk clunk. Because I'm a pretty badass chunk 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 chunk, and I got this gun. Clunk clunk clunk. And I'm gonna shoot you with it. Clunk clunk.
Even story-wise, that completely destroys it, because the one thing you can do that, I mean, and every time any anime or superhero show had, like, some stock transformation that took up 30 seconds of airtime, you're just going, well, that's kind of just, like an exaggeration of what's really happening.
It's implied, you know, that it's not taking, like, that long.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, this is actually a second. They're just going way overkill.
No, it's Cybertron. When you start they're talking just, they're trashing. They're going like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you just imagine just Megatron standing there going, are they freaking done yet?
Yeah. Look, like, we got other things like to do today. I mean, yeah. I got the dry cleaners.
Yeah, it's back to it's back to Final Fantasy VI, where it's like, okay, my timer bar hasn't filled up yet. I gotta wait my turn.
Yeah, only now you can trash talk while your timer bar is filling up. Final Fantasy VII summons. That's the round. Supernova.
Okay, you've been hit. You've been hit 10 times. 3 more are coming. Move. Yeah.
But then the key thing is, at least it looks cool. Yeah, I don't know where we were coming from on that one. How did we get on that? Aaron, did you have anything else you wanted to bring up about the episode?
From the episode, I think I'm good with my list, other than, at the very end there, Megatron and Critical Care Bupta was really kind of like truly hospital spooky.
Yeah, that was pretty. That was, that was
tubes and wires and respirator sounds going on,
pumping and parts and missing stuff in his chest.
Yeah,
yeah. I guess the long term thing of that is, like, now we've kind of entered the a little bit of an allusion to me to the animated season one thing of, like, Megatron's there but not in good shape.
Right,
and
I think it's becoming a trend ever since movie one to just have Megatron's in storage off to the side somewhere.
It's a looming threat.
Break in case of emergency.
Unleash the Megatron. I think the main question out of all that, the main two questions is, A, is Megatron's revival going to be something that's saved for a series or a season finale, or is it going to be played out over the course of the season? And B, Starscream has a piece of Dark Energon. What's he going to do with it? Because I think maybe if I'm wrong and Skyquake's dead, that is still a way to bring Skyquake back, is to stick a piece of Dark Energon in him and just turn him into a big scary zombie with a Gatling gun and etc.
Did you ever play Left 4 Dead? The zombies never have guns.
Hey, they could. They still know how to use them.
Yeah, but are they robot transformer zombies?
That too.
Not yet.
We're working on
waiting
it.
Waiting for the expansion pack.
We are working on it. So lots of places for the show to go. We now know there are sleeper agents on Earth, although that did raise the question of why, and Starscream even brought it up, going like, I'm surprised you never thought of activating any of these sleeper agents here on Earth, rather than, but again, that to me, even though it's a bit of a plot hole thing, it also is vaguely validated by how Megatron has been presented as, at this point in this continuity, being completely insane. So, like we were talking about it in earlier episodes, he shows up and his plan is like Starscream. And now it's like, we've got an army of Eradicons. We've got sleeper agents across the Earth. I want to raise a legion of zombies.
Yeah. I don't know. That was a standard Transformers point that I just didn't even, I thought about, but completely spaced of, you know, again, conveniently, Earth has all this Energon sitting on it, has all these sleeper Aegis sitting on it. Right. What else is going to be just sitting
right there?
The Matrix is going to crash on it. The Allspark's going to float by. The Sun Collector is going to pop up.
It's going to be an arc just in Mount St. Hilary.
Yeah, just as a fan of Transformers, you kind of, in your head, just like, Starscream's actually saying there's so many potential toys buried here.
Well, when Starscream even said, you know, there's so much Energon and Sleeper Agents buried on this insignificant rock, and I was like,
yeah.
I don't think it's insignificant at this point, sir.
Yeah.
In fact, if there are Sleeper Agents all over the place and Energon stores buried here, I don't think this has ever been insignificant.
Well, yeah, if this is insignificant with Energon stores that big and Sleeper Agents hidden, like, how many are on the important planets? There's like a graveyard of like 1,000 Decepticons just waiting to come back.
And it's like, what are the important planets if this one is insignificant? that was kind of amusing to me. Just that, like, it's those little things which are almost a little plot holy, yet the show almost makes fun of them itself. So I don't really know what to say. But we'll be watching it for the next little while. I mean, is it going to be running weekly until we're through the first 26 episodes?
It's weekly so far, I believe.
Oh man, we got to figure out a regular time to do these things, which is going to cut in on all kinds of other things.
Yeah.
Podcasting takes time. But we'll figure it out. We will continue the prime time because I am enjoying the show and I want to talk about it. Like I said, back when we were doing animated, this is a very different era than if we were trying to do this back during the Unicron trilogy, where we'd probably be like, hey,
like, oh, I didn't watch that. Oh, well.
Episode 38. Motion.
Yeah, I'm sure I would be not happy about getting up at 6 in the morning every day to see the show.
Oh, yeah, that too. At least we're on a prime time slot now, too, I think. Is it prime time or is it in the morning? I don't have the hub.
Prime time.
Yeah, prime time. Prime is in the prime time, so we can watch and discuss it here on WTF Prime Time. Intentional. It wasn't intentional.
Also, if you're in the U.S., now available on iTunes for...
Yeah, you just mentioned.
$3 episode.
Are they in 1080?
It says buy HD, and Darkness Rising Part 1 you can get for free in HD.
You should grab that and see if it's in 1080. Yeah. That's kind of awesome.
Free HD episode. Let's see what the little drop-down says. Add to wish list, share on Facebook, copy link.
Isn't that like the fastest turnaround on having a purchasable media of an episode?
That's pretty close. I think most TV shows wait a week before it shows up, and Masters and Students is sitting here to be bought for $3. I'll, after this is done, so I don't kill my Skype because something on my network is trying to, I'll hit up the free HD and maybe have a bit to say about it later.
Yeah, see how it is. If it's like open source or if it's written with DRMs. That's another question.
It's iTunes, so it's written with DRM.
That's the only thing that makes me not really
near iTunes.
That's the only thing that makes me not really want to drop the coin on it because I don't like dropping coin on something where with games, okay, I could see where it's coming from, but when it's just a simple video clip or an MP3 and it's like, here is the contract for this half-hour episode of a TV show, I'm like, I don't even want to bother with this anymore. You are making me want to commit crime for the sake of of convenience, of all things. Not that I support the illegal download of video media or music media.
Really into corrupting people this episode.
You know, I have viewpoints on the nature of digital media that will take an entire podcast for me to go over, so I'll just stay over here for now. But unless we have anything else we want to bring up, I believe that would be a nice cap to our third episode of Prime Time for the sixth episode of Transformers Prime.
Yeah, I'm done.
Aaron, what about you?
Yeah, I'm good. No more surprise news stories for me to drop on you.
All right, how many was that? This two, this episode?
Two.
Yeah.
Yeah, more or less.
Aaron is the one with the foresight to actually refresh the front page while we're recording.
Which is probably half the reason why I'm Skyping out.
Could be, yeah. You're loading an entire front page. That's how many kilobytes of bandwidth? Holy crap.
Yeah.
What are you on, Canadian internet? Am I right?
Oh, topical joke.
Openmedia.ca. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we will talk to you again
some other time.
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.